Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Body Podcast. My name is John Zombro. I am a physical therapist, an author, an exercise physiologist, a biomechanist, and a human performance geek of all types. I am here today to introduce episode number 74, which is a new format for us on this show. It's called Jay-Z on the Spot, also known as Blind Q&A. And none of this would ever be possible without my amazing, incomparable, magnificent co-host, PK. Good morning, PK.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I am good. And partly I'm good, as we often say, is because I get to do this. I look forward to it every week. And you know, who we are and what we're all about here on the Lifetime Body Podcast is trying to, you know, help people make sense of the science that's out there and really do make your body last a lifetime, as well as achieve peak performance throughout that lifespan at any age. And so that's what we're up to. And interestingly enough, you and I were chatting recently, and you know, just like a good research study needs to be double blinded, and that's a circumstance in which neither the experimenters nor the subjects know who is in the treatment versus the control group. Well, in this Q&A round, I have no idea what you're going to ask. That's the honest truth, folks. Haven't seen the questions, and really we want to make this to be very tangential, perhaps, and certainly organic as a conversation. And this episode, you know, really came to us as an inspiration to just try to be spontaneous and broad ranging. And that's at least within the scope of things I think I can talk about, which would be health, fitness, peak performance, and physical therapy. So with all that said, PK, I'm happy to turn it over to you and excited to see where this thing goes.
Absolutely. And I think that I'm excited. I've cooked up some, you know, a broad range, a handful of different things I'd love to get your thoughts on. But before we dive into that, it is with a heavy heart that we have to dedicate today's episode to Eddie Money, who passed away earlier this week. Did you know that, John?
I didn't know it because I was disconnected and out in the mountains.
I thought maybe that you may not have seen that. So anyway, on the 13th, he passed away. He was a legend, and it is with a heavy heart that we dedicate this episode to him, but also with a celebration for those just absolutely amazing pop rock tunes that he produced throughout his lifetime. So anyway, I hate that I'm springing that on you as well. I thought maybe that had crossed your path. But anyway, any thoughts on Eddie Money?
Awesome. You know, loved Eddie Money, always will. And, you know, he really burst on the scene. You know, I think it was 77 or 78 with Two Tickets to Paradise. That was his first big hit of many, and, you know, went on to really, you know, just be, you know, kind of an interesting place where some folks said, you know, his voice wasn't the most melodic voice. You know, it was a bit raspy. But a great lyric writer and a great performer, and you know, an interesting story. You know, I won't go too far, but I think a lot of people know that Eddie started out as a police officer. He was a New York City beat cop, for lack of a better term, and he just decided that you know, Eddie Mahoney, his real name, he would move into the stage, the pop rock stage, and became Eddie Money, and known as the Money Man. And I think it's very fitting of you to dedicate the show to him, and he'll be on our minds as we have this discussion.
Absolutely. Well, I think that I read an interesting tidbit that he was told initially that the song Two Tickets to Paradise, excuse me, was not commercial. So it's funny to think in the early 70s, just about how the record execs were in control of, you know, it was their opinions. And if we've fast forward to right now, 50 years later, he would have just put that out and people would have got the tune with no friction. But let's turn the page and get into the first question. And all right, so we're going to start. I'm putting you on the spot here. So recently, like in the last week, I saw some things in the, you know, whatever the news of the entertainment space. Bill Maher. Do you know who Bill Maher is, Jay-Z?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, so he went on this rant about how there should be more fat shaming, like present day. This happened in the last week. And then I saw a video of James Corden responding to him, and I didn't even watch all of Bill Maher's clip because I didn't have to watch it to know that he's just a complete idiot and he's a dick. And if you need to beep that out, you absolutely go for it. But it kind of did get me thinking about fat shaming, the body positive movement, models, both male and female, Marvel superhero bods, both male and female, and so on. And we kind of live in these strange times where body image can be influenced by so many factors externally, and it's not based in fact. And I think it can be just heavily influenced by opinion and everything like that. So here at TLB, we do celebrate all human beasts. And I want to kind of have you talk about this whole idea in terms of body comp based on the science. And so some of the questions I have are, where should we strive to be in terms of body comp? For just peak health, because I know that you have some thoughts on that, but also just in terms of peak performance. And then what are your thoughts on this whole fat shaming, body positive, this kind of weird dystopia we live in terms of self-image not being related to actually what our body can do and more be related to opinion, and that is just so all over the map.
Wow, that's really a great topic to get into, and I agree with you. I think it is it's a cornerstone of what we're trying to do here at the Lifetime Body, which is celebrate all of us, and no matter where you are on the spectrum of body composition, we want you to feel good about who you are, and also to feel good in trying to get to a good place, for health and longevity and performance. So really this whole idea about, shaming, I feel like that's just, there's no place for that. It's just not an appropriate thing for one person to do to another. And what we should do is help and pull each other up. And so, sure. We want everyone to feel good about how they look themselves, but we really don't need to tell someone, how they should be looking, at least. So you talked about science. And so, with body composition, or let's say percent body fat, which would be, you look at your human beast, and you've got, kind of two ways to divide up your tissue. One is body fat, and then the rest is called lean body mass. And that includes muscle and bone and organs and such. So, The literature there is a broad range, and it's a bit sketchy, but I would say that for the most part, we see health really being strong for females when body composition or percent body fat is somewhere between 15 and 30%. And then with males, it's probably about 10 to 25%. And I should probably say right away, the reason there are gender differences, there are many gender differences. I think we all appreciate those. But, if we look at this with an evolutionary eye or perspective, the female body is really on the earth to, keep the species, to procreate and reproduce and have the species perpetually present or propagated. A lot of P words there, sorry. and so that there are some reasons why a slightly higher body fat percentage is common and ideal in females versus males.
Absolutely. And so we take a look at that. So those are some, I know you're just painting with a broad brush and those are the numbers and it's different, but so we're looking at, I guess that this kind of came up because this is a comedian saying something insane to generate exposure to himself. And it's obviously unhinged and judgmental and not even entertaining, in my opinion. But I think that it's also just so dangerous. Now, talk to me about, because in the science, talk to me about that, because that's a pretty big swing in the percentage. Each of those, it was, a 15% swing in there. Let's just talk about men for a second. So we've got 10% to 25%, because theoretically Bill Maher, even though he's such a jerk, could look at a man who was at 25% and just go off on him. And what you're saying is that could be for health. That could be a good place to be on the high end of that spectrum.
Yeah, and again, that range, there's a 15% span from 10% at the low end to 25% at the high end. You know, it's generalizable. You know, if you somewhere got in the middle, you know, the mid-teens probably, that's great. And the research is fairly supportive that, you know, getting your body fat lower than that might not get you much more in terms of health. Although mm-hmm. there may be some, you know, performance or aesthetic things that can happen. But coming back to that, you mentioned, well, if a person's up near that 25%, yeah, that's a little bit on the high. It's kind of looking mm-hmm. at borderline, you know, whether we talk about body mass index or waist to height ratios and some of those other markers that correlate with body fat percentage. But we have to appreciate, well, what if we have an individual who, you know, kind of looking at the animal fit model is more of a bear and has sure. some very strong genetic propensity to hold a bit more weight. And of course, keep in mind that, you know, up until very recently, that evolutionary was an advantage, you know, to survive times of famine. So it's not fair to say someone with those kinds of genetics who might be, you know, really very healthy and functioning well at 23-24% body fat, they don't need to try to get to 10, and it might not be as easily attained. So a couple thoughts there, and stop me if I go too deep, but you know, we can appreciate what happens on the higher end, you know, as we get too high in our body fat, that alters insulin signaling, and we have extra weight that's loading our joints, and generally it's more pro-inflammatory, and okay, so we know about that. But if body fat gets too low, again, slightly different for males and females, but if it gets too low, then we start to possibly be deficient in some areas, and that can affect hormone regulation, thyroid function, testosterone levels for males, you know, and other things. And so it is possible to see a dude, you know, rip down to, you know, 5%, you know, although it's not necessarily healthy or sustainable. So, you know, that's where that unrealistic thing kind of comes in from time to time.
Right. Well, and you did mention that, because I did want to flip that coin over and say, okay, you know, the sort of the body positive movement, which I did a little research on, this is, again, and you said it really, really nicely, you know, we don't want to at all tell anyone how they should feel or how they would look. So we're not talking about from the outside in judging another person's body or even, you know, like passing on any sort of commentary on that. But the body positive movement is that everyone should have a positive body image regardless of how you look and where your health is. But on there is, in terms of body comp, some ramifications for having a higher body fat percentage. And I wanted you to touch on what happens if you do get out of those ranges in terms of, you know, optimal health. So if you are up above 30% body fat for a woman and 25% for a man, what are sort of the considerations and the ramifications, not connected to how you feel, but how your body functions?
Sure. And I'd even say that generally speaking, mm-hmm. You can't feel your best if your body fat is that high, because obviously the function and how you feel are, you know, obligatorily coupled, shall we say. Mm. You know, so there's, you know, if you're at 40% body fat, you aren't going to feel as good as if you were at 20. I mean, you know, that's in terms of, okay, you've got this body weight or body mass that you've got to move around. You've got probably, and I'll say it this way, probably fat packing in around your organs. That's known as visceral fat. It's on the inside. It's not the subcutaneous fat we have under our skin. I'm going to go down this rabbit hole just briefly, but you know, that's where we're talking about like a bear or a person who genetically, you know, is designed to be a little bit heavier. They're bigger boned and also have, you know, just ability to naturally just want to store a bit more fat. Well, some of those people are what are known as highly insulin sensitive, and they have what's known as a high personal fat threshold. So they can create new adipocytes, which are fat cells, and continue to store energy, you know, as fat, as subcutaneous fat, which isn't as unhealthy as the visceral fat. So, you know, interesting thing, again, the people who are naturally gifted with this energy storage mechanism, that's a great way to say that, can be very healthy at the, in the 20s, you know, percentage of body fat, and may not need to be quite as low. But coming back to your point is, as fat gets too high of any type, it starts to alter our hormone signaling, particularly with, like, you know, signals of satiety. So, you know, you don't feel as full, don't know when to stop eating. That's related to the hormones leptin and ghrelin, among others. We have this loading, you know, mechanical loading, which is an impact or the result of increased body weight on the joints and tissues. And that has been shown to be problematic in most cases. And there's, I guess there's a lot of other things to talk about when you look at circulatory health and cardiovascular risk and even, you know, the risks of, you know, some cancers all can be happening when we're too heavy. So my point with body positive would be, just like I said, you know, fat shaming, it's not necessary for another person to, you know, be derogatory towards someone. In fact, we've got to be compassionate and helpful. But also with this body positive movement, I think we need to encourage people not to be delusional. And I don't mean that mean-spirited, but, like, if you're going to say, well, I'm just going to be happy and love my body, you know, even if it's very unhealthy and I'm not feeling as good and my lifespan's probably not going to be as long, I'd say, well, you know, okay, I want you to be happy, but there's also, you could feel better and you could perform better, and then you can decide how you perceive how you look.
Jay-Z, that's kind of what I wanted. I mean, you and I have had conversations, but we haven't put that all together. So I thought that was awesome. Anything else in this kind of in and around this topic that came to mind that we didn't touch on?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we touched on most of those, the key areas, but really with this, the idea for any of us, whether we call it a lifetime body focus or not, is, you know, we have to understand our genetics. And so our genetics in terms of being, you know, general in the human genome and, you know, the ancestral adaptations that we have over 2 million years, it's like, yeah, humans are designed to be, you know, mobile, active, healthy, vital, vibrant, all those things. And we tend to achieve that fairly easily when the basics, which are never sexy, are in place. So if we're, you know, we're eating reasonably, you don't have to be it may vary from person to person what that looks like. Getting enough movement, getting good sleep, the light exposure, all those things are critical. Well, if we do that, we tend to fall into that range, you know, of body composition that we were discussing. And then that range is really strongly correlated with, again, health, longevity, and performance, can be tweaked in different directions.
Dynamite. Well, that was fantastic. Okay. Topic or question number two. So I was listening to another podcast, the Bill Simmons podcast, and Steve Nash, who's legendary Hall of Fame basketball player from Canada. He's a renowned soccer fan. Now he's a commentator and a team owner, and kind of in a wide ranging conversation about professional athletes and basketball. They ended up talking about elite athletes, and really what Simmons asked him a question about Christian Pulisic, who is a young, like maybe a generational talent for USA soccer, who's playing over in Chelsea now. And basically they were talking about elite athletes and Bill was saying, is he going to make it? Does he have the stuff? And what Nash said, and this is, I'm going to go ahead and quote there. He says, people ask, what's the difference when you go up a level? And he's talking about the elite performers. And this was his answer. He said, it's speed of thought. It's thinking quick. That at the top, a lot of the physical attributes are almost negligible or their differences on the margins. But, you know, Steve Nash is saying it's speed of thought. So anyway, my question to you, Jay-Z, you studied elite athletes. Do you agree with Nash? What does the science say about this? He's generally talking about basketball and soccer, fast twitch, dynamic team sports. So what about in other disciplines? You've studied all sorts of sports, from weightlifting to distance to the track. What are your thoughts on that? Is it speed of thought and thinking quick that separates the elite? And it's the floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I would say that it applies more strongly, you know, that statement applies more strongly to team sports, court and field sports. And, you know, you can start naming the, you know, obviously you name basketball, soccer, we've got football and hockey and tennis. So, you know, a lot of these you know, sports where there's a multi-directional movement demand that is dynamic, and it's coupled with an opponent and you know, a playing arena, and there's all sorts of, and usually there's an implement or two involved, you know, like a hockey stick and a puck or tennis racket, ball, so forth, so on. So we first of all recognize that elite athletes, yeah, you know, there's probably a like a requisite level of function where, you know, one has to be of certain speed, strength, power, body size, et cetera, for each sport. And sure, occasionally there are outliers, but generally speaking, yeah, you know, people are going to, they're going to be pretty good already. And those physical capacities can be trained a bit more. So, you know, we need the genetic gifts to some extent. We need some training to polish, but then ultimately the best players, and, you know, you can go down the list, you know, you start naming more athletes, you know, you say Michael Jordan, for example, sure, or, you know, John Elway or Tom Brady, Larry Bird, you know, and keep going. So you can look at some of those people and say, well, gosh, Michael Jordan was really, you know, an amazing athletic specimen. But then, you know, Larry Bird, and I don't want to sell Larry Bird short because he was a good athlete, but he obviously he added a level of cognition that upregulated his physical capacities. You know, he just had that court sense and that ability and, you know, the wiring, you know, to kind of see things and predict them before they happen. And you know, there's definitely this speed of thinking, as Nash indicates. And, you know, and in baseball, you look at MLB, that's really an interesting area because there's been a lot of studies as, you know, well, what is the single most powerful determinant of success in hitting? So baseball hitters, you know, they've got this amount of strength and they can achieve this bat speed, or they have, you know, other reaction times and things. But really, it turns out it's visual acuity. So it turns out they need to be able to see the stitches on the baseball before it leaves the pitcher's hand at 100 miles an hour to figure out what's going to happen and commit to the swing. And so, so yeah, there's a neural processing that happens in all of sport. And I think that some of that can be trained, at least the literature says that. Mm. But also, you know, again, we're really relying on probably what training does is just add some polish to those skills. And I'm really rambling, but one fighter pilots are another one. So you talk about like a sport. So I've got a couple of friends who, you know, that's what they've done. And they're right up there with the baseball hitters in terms of visual acuity and documented reaction time. And those things nowadays are tested. And so, you know, you can really find out if a person's got the potential to be quote unquote a top gun, just like, a batter of great success.
Absolutely. Well, two things come to mind. One, Top Gun 2 is coming out. I didn't know. Are you familiar with that? You teed that up for me. The second thing is, I'm glad that you brought up the baseball and I'm also glad you brought up Jordan Bird, because Michael Jordan, amazing physical athlete, dunk contest, 45-inch vertical, legendary physical attributes, legendary competitor, right? And Bird, he was also a tremendous athlete, but not on that level. But just in general, I do think that from the outside looking in, we can't see how someone's minds work. We can see it manifest in decision-making or a home run, but we can't be inside that hitter's mind when he sees the ball come off the fingers and sees the stitch and says, all right, this is a, you know, fastball up, so this is how I'm going to react. So I guess let me follow up with a different question. Let's say you are just a man on the street like myself, or like an amateur athlete. What do you think the protocol is to sort of see where you're inclined mentally, or what would you do to sort of foster this in yourself, even for, you know, someone like me, where I'm like, oh, mountain biking, you know, it's just something I do for leisure, but how would I train my brain to react more quickly just for my own, enjoyment?
You know, physiology and psychology have potential links. And so I wanted to say it that way because I didn't want to say, you know, always, you know, if you have, say, this kind of body, you're going to have these kinds of preferences, sure, or these kinds of traits. I don't think that that's true. But in many cases, you know, that we can probably generalize a bit, and we can say that, you know, there is some wiring and firing, you know, wiring of the brain and firing of the muscles, relationships. And so the person who's got a lot of fast twitch muscle fibers and certain other traits, you know, they're probably going to be more inclined to these, you know, fast reactive kinds of things. And then let's say a person who's got, you know, a lot of power capacity, you know, their speed might not be quite as great, but their fourth generation is higher. You know, you go on, you're going to give these lots of examples, sure, but I think ultimately if a person finds themselves in a sport or some type of training capacity that they love, that seems to fit them reasonably well, then there is a training component, because there's this refinement of motor output from the cerebral cortex. And so that over time, and this is all well documented, you know, over time, the body or the brain learns to fire just the right amount of muscle fibers at the right time in the right sequence, and not actually have more muscles contracting against that, which would be like driving with the brakes on. So training, yeah, can refine neuromotor skills. And so if we have that raw potential, which is probably most important, and then we add some training to it, you know, we can enhance that. And the human is really interesting because we often talk about being a versatile, durable beast. It's a compensator as well. And so I've had some great conversations with coaches over the years, you know, about, well, you know, that they've seen, you know, in their athletes. And Mike Kerrigan, who was just retired, he was the throws coach at Montana State for a long time. He said, gosh, I'd always notice how if a person had some deficits with visual acuity, that they could compensate with increased hearing. Or again, in different sporting capacities, if someone was lacking a bit in power, they could make up for that in timing. And there again are many examples. But yeah, I think we always want to embrace, you know, movement as a skill and as an art form that we can practice and we can refine and we can always get better. And then a better movement it's more enjoyable, it's more pleasant to observe, but it's also easier on the body and usually produces a greater outcome.
John, wonderful, wonderful answer. Okay, one more. We're gonna have one more question. We're gonna finish out with a speed round. Okay, in the news, this is kind of a hot topic: recovery lounges, and this could be anything from cryo, IR sauna. We got Normatec, which is basically these bags that squeeze different parts of your body to increase blood flow, or that's what they claim. On the physical side of things, and then on the other end of the spectrum, we have studios dedicated to helping physically and mentally stressed people recenter themselves through stuff like weighted blankets, new age brainwave techniques. My question to you, why is this a trend? Is this the ridiculous stress we're under? Is this worth pursuing? Personally, I think that it is, but I guess the kind of the mental side of the weighted blankets and the brainwave techniques was kind of new to me when I was doing some research for this question. What's going on here? Why is this sort of trending up, and is it a fad, and can it be useful?
I envisioned a spectrum or a continuum as you were fleshing that out. And I think, yeah, you know, we, on the one hand, on the recovery end of things, we're seeing very good research really happening, you know, currently and rapidly teaching us or reinforcing the value of recovery in health, performance, and longevity. Maybe dive into that a bit, and some practices that can really be supportive. Then on the other end, we kind of get into, well, there is this craze now, the biohacking trend, and you know, there's money to be made, and there's marketing being done, and so we have that, and so the, you know, you and I, and you know, as humans and common men, we have to sort through it and say, well, okay, what do we want, and how do these things impact us getting what we want? And so, okay, now that I've fleshed out how I think I'd like to respond, I would say that yes. If you look at the most basic of things where we say fitness or performance is really the result of training plus recovery. So we have to, you know, we have to apply training stimuli to cause adaptation in the body, but we have to recover and absorb that. And the physiology literature calls that supercompensation. The body supercompensates from that workload and then says, okay, now I'm prepared for a little bit more next time. Well, that's how it works. And so instead of being super macho and all pain, no gain, you know, we're really now we're starting to embrace, oh, well, I do need to occasionally train hard or long or whatever, but I also need to rest hard. Or, you know, recover smartly to maximize that thing in the body. In fact, that's really, and we talked about this, I think it was last week, that's really the problem with maybe a lot of, you know, professional athletics or current sports models, is that their frequency is too great on the exposures to hard things, and therefore recovery is not good enough, and that can be a health compromise. But there's a way to do this, having enough recovery, where you don't compromise your health and you still achieve high performance. So you talked about like cryotherapy. So that's cold exposure. You mm-hmm. know, that's a hormetic stimulus. We've hit on that before. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, sauna of all types is very well supported for health benefits. There's some slight differences between the, you know, traditional hot, you know, finished dry saunas versus the infrared models, which we have readily available now. You know, Normatec is there. There used to be a thing called Game Ready, which was similar, you know, had a vasopneumatic cuff and cold water circulation. Lots of that stuff's out there. Electrical stimulation. And then we get into some of those physical therapy modalities. And I'm not even going to call them physical therapy modalities anymore. They're just modalities. So all types of electrical stimulation or dry needling or ultrasound, cold laser, you know, all those things. You know, I think a lot of those things can be potential one percenters, you know, and so if, you know, you're doing these things, it may slightly accelerate the process of recovery within the body. And that's never a bad thing. And so, you know, I'm all for it. You know, I think we just have to be careful. And when we start looking at, well, what are the practices, how much efficacy has been shown, what don't we know right now? Mm-hmm. So like weighted blankets, okay, that there's some thought that affects the parasympathetic nervous system because the pressure stimulates the vagus nerve, and so again, maybe there's a 1% there. And you know, the pulse electromagnetic field, you know, like the grounding mats you can stand on or the sheets that you can put on your bed that you know, plug into a grounding outlet, and they have, you know, a negative ion transfer, which allows your body to open up calcium channels and decrease inflammation. Okay, yeah, okay, maybe there's something there. It might not be any better than walking barefoot in your backyard for 20 minutes a day. So says the research. But again, in this modern world, if we, you know, want to use a bunch of these toys, why not? Like, my only point would be, I don't think you can beat the basics. And so if you go for a short barefoot walk and you jump into the cold water of any source, lake, ocean, you know, whatever, you know, you have to move some firewood or whatever, you're getting those things. And then maybe you eat, again, the plant-based diet where you're just not eating a lot of packaged processed food. And you know, we can argue, well, who needs more, you know, micronutrients or wants to be more plant centered or animal centered, you know, whatever. But I think the big rock is, hey, let's get away from the takedowns like processed food. Anyway, didn't mean to, you know, go too far, but like recovery is important. And I think each person should sort through how much they want to use all the technology and devices that exist.
I like that. I think that I'm personally seeing connection between the increased stress, that low level consistent stress. And so it seems like, especially on the end of the spectrum of weighted blankets and the ion stimulation and the technology, the gadgets, let's just say, personal gadgets. That seems like a response on the consumer side, but it really does address this issue, this challenge that we face of stress. So I like how you put it about the basics. And Jay-Z, I feel I haven't stumped you yet, man. So
can I come back?
Yeah.
Say one more thing about, because I think that you really sparked that when you said stress, and we need to have this stress optimization or stress balance. And so, you know, I notice I didn't say stress elimination. I mean, right. Some stress is fine. We need it actually to function, but everything, well, not everything, but there's so many things in life that are potentially stressors that we can manipulate. And so we have, if we have too much training that's too often or too hard, that's a stressor we can manipulate. And if our sleep is not ideal, you know, that's creating a stress in and of itself. You know, food can be either relieving to stressors or causing them. And so if we start to just look at, okay, you know, how do we feel? How are we performing? You know, how do you look? And look in terms of like, well, do you notice your eyes are puffy and, you know, you have a lot of inflammation or so that's kind of the thing. What recovery is doing is helping us to optimize or balance that stress and to get it into that sweet spot in the zone that really works for us, that allows us to function best. And so I'm all for, if we need to do things to help bring down stress, like, the hot and the cold and the vasocompression and deprivation tank or whatever, you know, whatever it is, those things are great, but we also need to look at the other side of the equation and say, well, what are we doing that possibly we could adjust so that we're not so stressed that we have to try to take it down? We're not bringing it up to too much in the first place.
Right. Well, that's the perfect, you know, bookend of that, is that if you're white knuckling everything in your life where you do need to schedule a half hour appointment to just quickly dip in, get under a weighted blanket, have some ions pumped through your body, and then you're back at it. It's a holistic situation. It's not just, maybe that's letting a little pressure off the valve, but it's not addressing the overall, environment that you're in.
Indeed. And this is fun. I'm really having a good time with, getting hit with these random things and, hopefully have, you know, some objective information and an opinion, and anything that you fire at me that I don't know, I'll say I don't know and look it up and get back to you or put that into the notes for the listeners. So, this is cool. It's fun.
I'm having a good time, and we're going to finish out here with, I'm calling this a speed round. So as we know, the people want to get to know you better. They do. They're thirsty for info on John Zombro, the man, the myth, the legend, and so on. So I'm going to go ahead and fire these at you. You pick one or the other, and we're going to go fast. If you want to give a little commentary, it's all good, whatever direction you want to go in. But we're just going to dip in here, and there's some easy ones and some tough ones, maybe. Okay, you ready?
So I should, when you give a topic, I should give a response, and that's how this is going to work?
You're just going to pick, I'm going to give you, for example, the first one is soccer or football.
And I should either say, I've got it. Okay. football.
Okay. Why?
I'm very concerned about, the collision related injuries, particularly those to the head, you know, and what we know about that. But having said that, I find that American football is an exciting game to watch. It's really one of the professional sports that is ideal to be a spectator. And the explosivity, the speed and power exhibited by the athletes is amazing.
Yes. Okay. So if you're reading for leisure, for leisure, fiction or nonfiction?
I've got to be succinct in my answer. So I do read a lot of nonfiction, as you know.
Yeah.
But when you say for leisure, I find that leisure is more enhanced by fiction. And for quite a while now, I've really been into the work of C.J. Box, who's not far from here, over in Wyoming, and he writes the Joe Pickett novels, among other things. And these are murder mysteries, for the most part, that involve Joe Pickett, the game warden over there in Bighorn County. And it's pretty cool.
I love it. I didn't know that. Okay, this is going to be tough. Pearl Jam or Nirvana?
I mean, I wouldn't want to pick. I'd like to say, you know.
Got to pick.
I know. You're putting me on the spot. I would just say Pearl Jam because, you know, I think they were, because of, you know, what happened with, unfortunately, for Nirvana with Kurt was you know, Pearl Jam had maybe a slightly longer run at it, and I thought that they had a bit more diversity in their music. But so I'd pick them for that reason. But certainly love both bands, and it's a close run to pick Pearl Jam over Nirvana.
Got it. Okay, this is gonna be tough. Sammy Hagar or David Lee Roth?
Okay, so now you're putting me like, well, okay, there's Sammy Hagar or David Lee Roth. Or there's Van Hagar or Van Halen with Roth.
All right, let me clarify. So this is as the lead singer of Van Halen, Sammy or David Lee?
You know, I'm going with David Lee Roth.
Yes.
And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because particularly those first four albums and the mm-hmm. first two in particular, you know, I think that those were the first two albums were the greatest Van Halen albums, mm-hmm. In my opinion, because, you know, Eddie was on his game. He hadn't really gone into keyboards too much, really hitting the guitar. And the other guys, you know, just always great as well. But, you know, Dave actually he's got a little better singing voice than some people might say. You know, I think that I want to give Dave credit there. But also, as a front man, you know, with the personality, with the gymnastics, I mean, nobody can beat Roth at that. So, you know, there it is. Now, I love Sammy. I've been with Sammy for life, you know, long before.
You know what? No judgment. We just have to pick one. Yeah. It was under – I'm putting the screws to you. All right. Yeah. So we're going to finish out with a couple of light, fluffy entertainment in the movie world. Bruce Willis or Harrison Ford?
You know, this is easy for me. I'm going Harrison Ford. I've just found him to be, you know, always such a great role player, and you know, the characters he plays are ones that I identify with slightly more, maybe than the work of Bruce Willis.
Got it. Okay, maybe this next one won't be tough at all either. Speaking of a little known part in Top Gun, I'm asking you, Meg Ryan or Michelle Pfeiffer?
Oh my. This one's a toss up as well. I'm probably going to go Michelle Pfeiffer.
Got it. And you know what? We're just going to leave that one out there. No explanation necessary.
Thank you.
Jay-Z, that's all we have for today. You are no longer on the spot, my friend. I think that, you know, actually I had a few other questions prepped that we will just leave, and we'll do this again. It was really fun to get you, you know, spontaneously just lobbing your insight. I tried to team up and, you know, questions that were at least on the, you know, cultural wavelengths out there and on my mind. So I appreciate it. This was fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it too. And thank you. And hey, thanks listeners for joining us. And if you like this kind of show, you know, leave us a comment, a rate and review, a question, by all means, we are happy to address all of those things and receive them. And yeah, I think that this came out, you know, this first attempt came out fairly well because it's good to be put on the spot and to be spontaneous and also really kind of address these hot topics. So I don't think we're always dry on this show, but this one, you know, definitely had the, you know, it felt lively to me. So would love feedback if you can do it. And in the meantime, keep rocking, stay awesome, and thanks again.
Adios.